intractable anymore.
Thank you. We missed you.
Yeah, everything okay?
Yeah.
Almost okay. Okay. In this material world, everything can only almost be okay, right?
Yes, Maharaj. How are you, Maharaj?
I'm okay. Almost okay. What to do. Anyhow, today we're going to read, continue our reading. We've been reading Subjective Evolution of Consciousness. Here's the link where you can find the PDF file. This is a book by Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Siksha Guru. And it's a very nice explanation. Actually gives the foundation of our preaching, Bhaktivedanta Institute preaching is found here, because this is our alternative theory to evolution. The non-Darwinian evolution theory, or post-Darwinian evolution theory, is given here by subjective evolution. Darwin is speaking of objective evolution, and we want to explain that evolution occurs, yes, we agree, but it's subjective evolution. Consciousness evolves. Not that the body evolves. Body can't evolve without the consciousness being there. If the consciousness is there, then the body can follow the development of consciousness. So last time, we left off on page 19. If you can all go to page 19, then we'll continue from there. And we read from this, let's see what paragraph. Yes, well, it's the first complete paragraph. It says, and reality is subjective. Reality is subjective, not objective. We think the objective is the reality, but according to Vedic conception, the subjective is the reality. Cognition is establishing what we cognize. Not that the thing out there, the object, is determining the cognition. The cognition is determining the object. This is the Vedic conception. Reality is subjective. It is based on consciousness. Color is perceived through the eye. It is not that the color is there and the eye can catch it. But the seer sees through the eye and perceives color. So color is a perception. Its position as actual substance should be traced to the subtle plane of existence. This is the nature of reality. The gross is coming from the subtle. In Sankhya philosophy, of course, that is described in the bifurcated thing, as a bifurcated thing. According to Sankhya philosophy, there are three branches of reality: the sense, the senses, and the sense objects. Sound is created by the ear, color is produced by the eye, and so forth and so on. The objects of the senses are in the mode of ignorance, tamagun. The sensual instruments are in the mode of passion, rajagun. And the power of sensation is in the mode of punya, sattagun. From these proceed light, the eye, and color, sky, the ear, and sound. In this way, mundane reality branches in three ways, tama, raja, and satta. So the gross world is coming from the subtle through the channel of consciousness. The feeler, the instrument of perception, is creating the object of his perception. Try to understand this principle of hypnotism. The whole thing is hypnotism. This whole creation, and it is completely in the hand of the supreme subject. All material laws have no meaning. The laws and the sub-laws are all pertaining to the subjective world. Hegel, once made a comment. He said, Newton's laws are not written in the sky. Newton's laws. What are Newton's laws? They are, we don't find them written in the sky. They're not written in the cosmos. F equals ma. We don't find it anywhere in the world or in outer space. We don't find that written anywhere. Then where is that? Newton's law is not written in the sky. It is written in the mind, coming from the mind, from the subjective plane. So the laws and sub-laws are all pertaining to the subjective world. Page 20. Dr. Murphy, how can one perceive this sort of hypnotism? Sridhar Maharaj, how can we know beforehand that in a laboratory combining hydrogen and oxygen, two gases will produce water? Only when one comes to a particular stage of scientific knowledge can he know that a more subtle thing like gas can produce a tangible material thing like water. And that way, when you have an idea of the higher substance, then you can understand how the soul of the gross has originated. 1 minute. Participant. Krishna Prabhu, Nandavach. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. We got everyone connected now. It's working out okay. Here's the page. We're reading of this article on page 20. It's a book, actually. We're now on page 20. So, and we were saying, Sridhar Maharaj said, the relative world is a perverted reflection of the absolute reality. So highly qualified things must be given the position of causal importance. It is not that the lower thing can produce the higher thing, but it is easy for the higher thing to produce something lower. This is not difficult to understand. So, is it difficult to understand? Can anyone explain? What is the proof that a higher thing can produce something lower, but the lower can't produce something higher? Anyone think of an example to prove that? So let's say we take some letters of the alphabet. Letters are the part of elements of our language. Letters from written language, anyhow, the written language. Letters are the elements of that, units of writing. The letters of the alphabet are the units of writing, of language, written language. So from the letters, can we produce a sentence? Automatically, if we put some letters in a cup and throw them on the table, would that produce any kind of sentence? Would that produce any kind of paragraph? A reasonable intelligence or complexity? No. Why? Because the letters are the lower part, not the higher part of the language. And the language itself is something higher than the letters. The language ability can put the letters together and make a sentence. It is not that the letters make the sentence. Although we say the letters make up the sentence that we are reading, Oh, we know every sentence has so many letters in it. It is not just the letters by themselves that make up the sentence. Okay? Something else has to be there, the language ability, the ability to put that intelligence, to put those letters together in a certain way makes up the language. So like that, the lower thing can produce the higher thing. All right, is that a good example? Huh? Yes?
But it's not like an object can have a reflection or a shadow. But a shadow cannot produce an object.
Ah, that also? What is produced? The shadow produced by the object? The light shining on the object produces a shadow. But from the shadow we can't get the object. Very good. Another good example. So the intelligence produces the language, and the language produces is broken down into the letters. So this is the same thing what science is doing. They have the life, the living organism, but they try to understand it in terms of the letters, of the letters, DNA, right? I just have so many letters now. C-H-N-O-P, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus. They try to understand life in terms of the letters, and they say that the letters somehow got together to produce the life. But they can't get the letters of the alphabet together to produce the language, the sentence. So in the same way, that's kind of a foolish way of trying to do things from the lower to get to the higher. It's not how it works. So this is not difficult to understand, Guru Maharaj says. So the modern scientific position is saying basically that stone can produce soul. But why not consider that soul can produce stone? We have to inquire about that process, how the soul can produce stone. But we have done away with that, and instead we say that stone is gradually producing soul. We are very fond of investigating in that line. Why? The subtle should be given more importance than the gross. Oh, sorry, the subtle should be given more importance than the gross. Why should we think that man has created God and not that God has created man? Another foolishness. Huh? That God is a creation of man. Man creates God for him to create man. No, not like that. Then God is the magician and we are his subjects. This is Dr. Singh, Dr. T.D. Singh, or Sri Damodar asking this question. Then God is the magician and we are his subjects. Sri Damodar, not only is he a magician, but the supreme, the super magician. He is not merely the kind of magician that is within our experience. What is, Dr. Murphy, what is the role of Yoga Maya, the Lord's internal potency? She is found in the eternal company of Krishna and our conception of divinity. Purusha, Prakriti, the masculine and feminine are existing together. One minute here. All right. Potent and potency, substance and potency are inconceivably interconnected. Otherwise, if we conceive of the Supreme Soul as existing independent of any potency, that would be the Brahman conception of Shankaracharya. Ultimate consciousness as non-differentiated oneness. So the absolute truth includes both potency and potent and potency. Purusha Prakriti, consciousness with energy. Actually, there are three main elements to be traced within divinity. Jnana, Bala, Kriya. The external aspect of the absolute whole is divided in three ways. Energy, consciousness, and ecstasy. Thinking, willing, and feeling. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat. The potency for maintaining existence is the potency of Baladev, or Bala. Chit, the aspect of consciousness, is Vasudev, Jnan. And Ananda, Ananda, ecstatic feeling, is Radhika, Kriya. So we have Baladev, we have Vasudev, who is Krishna, and Radha. Radha, Krishna, Balaram. Like Vasudev means Krishna by himself, without Radha. So these three isolated or separated aspects we think to think of. So jnana, bala, kriya, knowledge, strength, and feeling. Satchidananda, eternity, cognition, bliss. Sandini, samvitladini, existence, realization, ecstasy. Baladev, Krishna, Radharani. These are the three phases of Advaita Jnana, or the one whole. Advaita means like Advaita. Dvaita, Advaita, or Advaita means two, and Advaita means non-dual, or one. So this Advaita Jnana means the knowledge of the one whole. But that one is not to be considered as one without division, because it's Advaita. It is not one. It is not two, rather. The absolute truth is not described as one, it's described as the negation of two. So the absolute truth is the negation of duality. It means duality must be there if there is to be negation of it. So that is the nature of the absolute truth. It is Advaita or Advaita. It is negation of duality. It exists only in that form. Not just simply as a unity without any negativity. What do we lose, Krishna Prabhu? All right. Difficulty getting connected from his side. All right, we have to wait until he resolves his problem. So, the one whole can be thought of in its primary evolved stage in three ways: main consciousness, main energy, and main satisfaction. In three phases, we are to conceive of that ultimate reality. It is there, jnana, bala, kriya, cha, thinking, feeling, willing, satchidananda, satyam, shivam, sundaram, eternity, auspiciousness, and beauty. Satyam, shivam, sundaram. And these three principles are expressed through evolution and dissolution in the eternal and non-eternal. And the eternal and non-eternal means both in the spiritual and the material worlds. These three phases principles are to be found. These aspects of theism have been dealt with in a very scientific way in the Sri Krishna Sanghita of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Once I consider from this point of view the question of the planets in Vedic cosmology. We see that by the movement of the different planets, a solar eclipse is caused by the moon's shadow falling upon the earth. And yet in the scriptures, it has been described that during the eclipse, the planet Rahu is devouring the sun or the moon. When Srila Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was in Puri during his last days, and an eclipse came, one devotee who was supposed to know Siddhanta, the conclusions of scriptures, was sitting next to Prabhupada. He suddenly ridiculed the idea given in the Bhagavatam that during a solar or lunar eclipse, Rahu devours the sun or moon. I could not tolerate that such remarks should be passed in regard to the Bhagavatam, and argued that what Srimad Bhagavatam has stated is not to be taken lightly. I offer what seemed like some far-fetched support. I said that in his Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has created so many characters, but I think that they are not imaginary. What he has written might have occurred during some other millennium, Kalpa, or Day of Brahma, and that has now come to the surface. In this way, I went on to support the cosmological position of the Bhagavatam by arguing that what is necessary to prove reality must also have some real position. It cannot but be in this way. My argument went, and Prabhupada supported me. I am understanding the position of the planet Rahu, or Shukadev and Vyasadev have said, is geographically impossible. But their statements are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the literal meaning of the scriptures is not to be taken lightly. Considering the importance of the literal meaning of scripture, Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. I thought, how am I to prove what the Bhagavatam says? I don't know. But what is said in Srimad Bhagavatam must be true. I have faith in that. There are so many statements on the cosmology of the universe in the scriptures. The Aryans, the spiritually developed men of former times, used to see everything as consciousness. They saw that the shadow is also conscious. Shadow, Abbas, is also considered to be a stage of consciousness. Only through that shadowy stage of consciousness can we come to the material conception of a thing. Before we reach the conception of a shadow, we must pass through some mental stage, and personification may be attached to that mental stage. Personification of the shadow may be referred to as Rahu. So, let's see. Who has a good connection here? Kavi Kartik Prabhu? Are you there?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Can you read?
Yes, Maharaj.
From there?
Yes, Maharaj.
Page 24.
The soul approaches matter, the material world. But before that, he must pass through a shadowy stage of consciousness called Chidabhasa. Consciousness passes through the shadow level of consciousness into matter, non-consciousness. And that shadow stage of consciousness has its personality. It is also conscious and may be known as Rahu. Every material conception presupposes a spiritual conception of that particular thing. The shadow through which consciousness must pass in order to perceive things as material has personality. And in Bhagavatam, the rishis, the seers of truth, are addressing it as Rahu because they are highly developed. They find the personal aspect of existence everywhere. What we perceive to be dead matter, they perceive to be conscious. Therefore, they always take the personal perspective. The soul, when going to experience any material conception, will have to pass through a medium which influences his consciousness to see things as material. What is concrete matter is unknown. It is a mere effect of consciousness. As everything material must have some conscious origin or origin in personal consciousness, there must be a personal conception of the sun, the moon, the earth, and all the planets. Before we reach the conception of a shadow or any other object, the soul has to pass through a conscious stage. That stage has some spiritual existence as a person. Therefore, the Bhagavatam refers to the sun, the moon, and the planet Rahu as persons. Everything, the earth, the moon, the stars, the planets, has a personal conception. In the background of what we can perceive with our dull senses, everything that is said to be matter, there must be a personal conception. Without the influence of a personal conception, consciousness cannot reach the stage of gross matter.
Okay. Now, what is your explanation of that? Can you summarize what you have understood from that?
Maharaj, it seems that when we pass from our original spiritual consciousness to this through ignorance, false ego, and different stages, and fall into the material consciousness, in that process, we are supposed to pass through a stage or phase where we cross the personal conception. Mentally we have to be prepared to perceive everything as matter, but before that, every consciousness is attached to a personal conception. But due to the ignorance, we fall into the material conception, after which we kind of forget or we get contaminated, so that we forget or we won't be able to see the personal conception with our dull senses. So that's why rishis and munis who can see higher levels of things, they could they can see everything to be conscious, even matter they could see up to having some consciousness. So similarly, the shadow, the sun, the moon, and the planet Rahu, and all the planets, all the stars, the rishis can see the personal conception which is above the material conception. So that's my understanding, Maharaj.
All right. So from our idea, the person, the consciousness is first. It must be there. Otherwise, what can we see? What can we experience? Nothing. If there's no consciousness there, no person. Consciousness, whenever there's consciousness, there must be a person. Right? Consciousness means there has to be a person there. Consciousness is like a reflecting state. So when you say I, it's actually you're reflecting reflecting what you're experiencing inward into yourself. There you are, you say I. But all your whole totality of experience, when reflected upon into yourself, that is called the self or the I, the person. So in Vedic conception, that is first, that is the foundation. And that is by nature spiritual, it's not a material thing. This consciousness, this self, can't be explained in terms of material experiences. We don't experience consciousness. Consciousness is what is doing the experience, is what allowing the experience to come. So the experience itself is not experienced. Experience can only experience other things. Of course, we can know that we are experiencing. We can be aware, we can be conscious that we are experiencing. But the experience itself is coming from the consciousness, and it doesn't directly experience itself, it experiences other things. But we also can know that we are experiencing, and in that sense, we can experience also. We can experience that we are experiencing, something like that. Anyhow, there are three stages. That is the first, is the foundation, the consciousness. Then the object that we are experiencing, but it has to pass through a third stage too, a middle stage. That allows the spiritual consciousness to perceive a thing that is experienced as material. So what is that third place, that third, the middle place? That has to pass through. What is that called?
Abhas.
Huh? Abhas. But what is that? What is that? What do we generally call that? Mind.
The reflection.
Mind.
Right.
Huh? The subtle plane is what causes the original spiritual consciousness. When the mind is polluted with material thoughts, conceptions, then it perceives the thing as material. So the subtle plane, the gross plane, and the spiritual plane are there. All right. Then continue reading. Cover. Can you continue reading where you left off?
Yes, Maharaj. Therefore, in the ancient scriptures, we find that great sages and rishis are always addressing everything within the world as a person. Although to us it is a dead matter, they have considered them as persons. Why? The matter is rather the shadow of the personal entity. The personal conscious entity is more real, and the matter we perceive through dimmed consciousness is less real. So that shadow is Rahu? Dr. Murphy asked. So that shadow is Rahu? Srila Sridhar Maharaj says, when we conceive of the personal representation of that shadow, it will be known as Rahu. Everything is conscious. The shadow, its effect, everything. When the moon is between the sun and the earth, the shadow of the moon is coming here. And what is coming is also conscious. Everything is conscious first, then there is matter. From the personal conception, things evolve to gross consciousness. It is also personal. So the rishis, with such a vision of reality, used to address everything as a person. The trees, the mountains, the sun, the moon, the ocean, when pure consciousness is coming to experience pure matter, then there must be some mixed stage, and that is a person suffering in karma. Person means they are not a fully developed spiritual person at present, but in a mixed condition. So what the rishis are saying, that everything is a person, is real, it is not a concoction. Everything is conscious. As the present scientists say, everything is matter, we have real cause to think that everything is conscious. Whatever you see does not matter. We can directly feel what is in our nature, that is conscious. Our consciousness may be in a developed or degraded position, but consciousness is nearer to us. We feel our mental energy only. This is a bit difficult. Okay, Maharaj.
Alright, thank you. Then, actually, there is a book by Hegel called The Phenomenology of Spirit. And he explains this also, how we can understand that what we are observing, the phenomena that we experience, that is also conscious. He shows in that book how that is so through philosophical argument. And if anyone likes to read that book, they can learn about this fact. And also we have described that in one of our, that book, we've also described that or discussed that in one of our online discussion groups, Yahoo groups called Intro Hegel. It is described there. There are so many lessons have been given there. On the online, if anyone likes to read that. If we have some time, we will also go into that. Study of Hegel, the phenomenology of spirit. Because it gives a very nice way of making some rational conception of all these things, scientific conception. So according to the scientists, when the Earth passes before the Moon, there's the Sun and the Earth, and then the Moon goes around the Earth, right? So when the Moon is in a certain position on the side of the Earth, which is going away from the Sun, one side is the Sun facing, the other side is the Moon. And so when the Earth is there in such a position that the Moon is, that the Sun is, that the Earth is between the Sun and the Moon, then the shadow from the Earth will cross over the Moon. That is called lunar eclipse. When the shadow that is cast by the Sun's reflection shining on the Earth, and in between Earth and Sun, sorry, Moon and Sun, then the shadow is cast on the Moon. That is called lunar eclipse. The Moon is moving around the Earth, so that eclipse lasts only a certain amount of time while the Moon is in that specific position behind the Earth. And when it moves a little off to the side, then the eclipse will gradually decrease. Anyhow, so the scientists explain it like that by the shadow of the Earth. But as explained here, the Vedic conception is that everything is a person. So Sun is Surya Dev. Earth is Bhumi Dev. Moon is Chandra Dev. Then what about the shadow? It's also a person. It's Rahu. That's what is being explained here. All are persons. Nothing is impersonal. And that's how the Vedic sages understood things. They understood things from that kind of perspective, subjective perspective. So if we want to read the Bhagavatam, and we hear all these things, especially about the astronomy given in the Bhagavatam, fifth canto, then we have to realize how they are talking, from what point of view they are talking. Doesn't exactly match what the scientists are saying today. To some degree, there's some agreement. But otherwise, there are many disagreements also. difficult, least difficult to understand how one can go from the conscious platform to the empirical platform as the scientists understand it today. What kind of correlation there is between what the Vyasadeva was seeing and what the scientists are explaining. But nonetheless, this is what our Vaishnava tradition teaches, that we must see from the conscious plane, see things from the conscious perspective, not from the empirical perspective. And that would be the more real position. And one who has transcendental knowledge, he can see and accept that. He can understand and accept that. It's not a matter of some science behind it. So, Purushottam, would you like to read?
Yes, Maharaj. So, everything is conscious. And present, the scientists say everything is matter. We have real cause to think that everything is conscious. Whatever you see does not matter. We can directly feel what is in our nature that is conscious. Our consciousness may be in a developed or degraded position, but consciousness is nearer to us. We feel mental energy only. We feel our mental energy only. Dr. Murphy, this is a bit difficult for us to fully grasp. When we see color, what are we actually seeing? Sridhar Maharaj, that is a mental stage. Dr. Singh, what is the reality of that object? Sridhar Maharaj, reality that is in the soul. Only the soul is real. The seer is reality. The subject is real. And whatever the subject feels also emanates from the subject. Dr. Singh, but are the objects the subject perceives also persons? When we are seeing the color red, now is red also a personality? Sridhar Maharaj, everything has this representation in the original, personal, conscious, spiritual reality. Otherwise, there is no possibility of its being reflected into this plane as matter. First, there is consciousness, and then, when it is in a more gross condition, it appears to be matter. In the study of ontology, it is taught that when studying a particular thing, although we can know that it has certain attributes to the eye, and that it appears to the ear in a particular way, these are all appearances. Independent of appearances, the ontological aspect of a thing, what it is, the reality of a thing, is unknown and unknowable. My contention is that when consciousness is going to feel non-conscious matter, it will have to pass through a conscious area to meet the material object. So, the full perception of that material thing cannot but be conscious, and consciousness always indicates the person. First, there is conception, and then the material. The conscious world is very near, and the material world is very far.
Krishna Prabhu, we are now reading on page 27, in the middle of the page.
Even I would like to read.
Let the Purushottam finish. First. Purushottam Prabhu, start that paragraph again? The conscious world?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. The conscious world is very near, and the mental and the material world is very far off. Therefore, the great rishis, whose thinking is highly developed, address whatever they find in the environment as if they are all persons. In the Vedas, the ancient scriptural literature of India, we find that the saints and siddhis are always in the midst of so many persons. In the background, everything is a person. Dr. Murphy, and person means thinking, feeling, and willing. Sridhar Maharaj, thinking, feeling, willing. A living entity has three phases, and it is also the same with God and His potency. There is a subject existing first, and then His experiences. And experiences of the subtlemost character come first, and are given the most importance. And when the subject is coming to the more distant area to conceive of matter, that will be the farthest point from him. He will address everything by which he is surrounded with personal conceptions. A personal conception cannot but assert that matter is far off. The direct connection of consciousness is with the shadow, the reflection of the material into the conscious world. The soul can understand that only. If matter can exist independently, then also matter has a shadow in the conscious world, and the soul is concerned with that shadow. In other words, there is a person and then the body. Just as the body is the after effect of the conscious living agent, matter is the after effect of spirit. Irrespective of all material consciousness, that which is in direct contact with soul is all personal. Chirabhas is something like the mental substance we have within. There are two kinds of persons, Shara and Akshara, the pure liberated soul and the soul who is struggling in the matter. Well, liberated and non-liberated persons are mixed within the world of material transactions, whether as moving or non-moving entities, or whatever their positions might be. Still, they should be considered persons. Since everything is a unit of consciousness, everything has personal experience and existence.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Murphy. So what do you see that Ganges
that's okay,
is but in reality...
Maribor, can you hear? Yes. Your signal has become a little weak. Let Krishna Prabhu read from here. Okay, Krishna Prabhu. Your voice is lying.
Suddenly, will you see the Ganges?
Okay. Go ahead.
Is it good?
Now it's good now.
Dr. Murphy, so externally we see the Ganges as water, but isn't reality, she is a person, Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Everything is a person. Before we go to the material conception, we must pass through the personal conception or aspect of that thing. In Vrindavana, everything is consciousness. But some things are posing in a passive way. But they are all consciousness. The Yamuna River, the cows, the trees, the fruit, everything is consciousness, spiritual. But they pose in different ways.
Conscious, not consciousness. Everything is conscious.
Everything is conscious. Being able to detect the conscious characteristic, conscious characteristic in everything. The Aryans saw all of nature as conscious and personal, addressed everything as conscious. Consciousness and personality are the universal bridges of reality. Whatever we may experience is conscious. The reflection of a material object is within me, and the plane within me is conscious. The subject is conscious, and whatever
yes.
kind of consciousness I'll just enlarge the... just a second, the subject is consciousness, and whatever kind of thing the object may be, it casts its reflection into the plane of consciousness. The observer of any objective reality is involved only with the consciousness from beginning to end, and can have no conception of matter apart from consciousness. Dr. Murphy, how can we differentiate consciousness from mind? Srila Sridhar Maharaj. In Bhagavad Gita, the path of differentiation between consciousness and mind is suggested.
You're having trouble getting your signal. We're having trouble getting your signal.
Hear me, Maharaji?
Yes. Some problem with the wireless, perhaps. Akshay, would you like to read?
Yes, Murat. What is Atma, the soul, the spiritual conception? We have come to the world conception by a particular process. By the process of elimination, we can trace that what the mind is. It is said that the basis of the mind is acceptance and rejection. Sankalpa and vikalpa. I want this, I do not want that. That is the mind. I think that God intends empathy and sympathy for the external world. That is the mind. Have relations in us what that thing is. It is within us, and one has to enter within his own self and try to have some personal experience of what the mind is. Then by internal analysis, one can write from directly in touch with the faculty of judgment, reason, intelligence, by asking, what is intelligence? Where is it within me? We should try to find out and come in touch with the reality. We should find what is the mind. It is already within me, and what is it, and what is reason within me. It's the source of my intelligence, and crossing the stage of decisive faculties, that what is the soul, we must try as yogi does to come in direct touch with the element within us. Mind and intelligence are within each of us. Why should we not be able to trace out exactly what they are, to see eternally what they are.
Okay, thank you, Prabhu. I just wanted to make some comment here.
When are they?
Akshay Prabhu, I just wanted to make some comment here.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just noticing what happened. Here I was thinking that Krishna Prabhu's connection was not very good. And then I'm realizing that I'm hearing that also with you. And so now my conclusion is that it's my connection that's not very good. Here's a perfect example of what we are talking about. What we are perceiving, we are thinking is there outside in the world. But it's coming through our perception, by due to our connection. If something is wrong with our connection, we think, oh, something is wrong with your connection. It's my connection that is faulty, and I'm hearing some faulty reception from you, and I'm saying, oh, Prabhu, your connection is not very good. That's how it works. What we are perceiving internally from our own point of view, we are projecting that's coming from outside. If my eye is bent in some way, then I'm thinking your face looks a little bent. Your nose looks a little bent because my eye is bent. Then I'm looking at your face and I think, oh, your face is not very straight. No, his face is okay. My eye is bent. Something like that. Or they tell, the example is given, if you're wearing the rose-colored glasses, then you'll see everything is colored in a pinkish way. But the things are not colored in a pinkish way. That is, your eyeglasses aren't like that, that are pinch. Not like that. So what we are seeing, we project outwardly. That is what the object is. But what the object actually is only some projection from us. Does anyone have any questions about all this? Yes?
Mr. Maharaj, here the last statement, why should we not be able to trace our exactly what they are, to see internally what they are?
What is that referring to?
Maharaj, is this what they are, is this a correct statement or something?
Are you saying here What is the source of mind and intelligence? And crossing the mind and intelligence, the deciding factor, faculty. What is the soul? The mind, intelligence, and above that is the Atman. So we must try to come in direct touch with the elements that are within us. Mind and intelligence are within us. Why should we not be able to trace out exactly what they are, to see internally what they are? Huh? This is the idea. Mind and intelligence are there within us. They are influencing what we are seeing outside. Then why should we not be able to see what are those mind and intelligence? We can see that. Why can we see what's going on with the mind and intelligence? Because there's something higher than the mind and intelligence. The soul is there. So the soul can perceive what is lower than itself. So from the soul position, we can analyze, what is this mind? What is this intelligence doing? How is it working? That's possible. Because the Atma is above this mind and intelligence. Just like mind and intelligence can be used to analyze the material, the gross material plane. Similarly, the soul plane can be used to analyze what is the mind and intelligence. This is what is being said here. We can trace out. Why can't we trace out? We should be able to trace out what is going on there in the mind and intelligence. Even that is possible. Yogis can achieve that kind of elevation. That kind of advancement can be made in them, by them. They know how to do that, and therefore they can control the mind and intelligence. They can, by rising above it, they know that there is something above that. And from that higher platform, they can see what's going on and control the mind and intelligence. And recognize what it is doing to create the illusion of Maya.
Maharaj, it is also mentioned here,
yes,
that the soul is more than even the experience. But
yes,
actually, without experience, there is no question of saying something like soul or the subjective reality. Or so, how it is integrated in our, you know, when we have developed the proper conception about the reality. Experience with the soul.
So just like this, we know that there's experience, because we are experiencing, right? And we know that there's something to experience, that's called the experienced. And there's that which is experienced, and there's the experience of it. Then what else is there, must there be? From logic.
Experiencer?
Ah,
experience?
Yes. Who is experiencing? That experiencer. From logic, we can understand if there is something that is experienced, there is the experience itself, then there must be an experiencer. But that is not within the experience. That is higher than the experience. But it must be there from logic. Logical point of view, just like seeing. You can't talk of seeing unless you're seeing something, unless there is something to be seen. There's no question of seeing. Seeing implies that there is something to be seen. You don't talk about seeing thing without understanding that there is seeing activity going on.
Yes, sir.
It's not possible to have a seeing thing that is not involved with seeing. So seeing and seeing, they go together. Can't be separated. And if they're seeing, there must be a seeing thing also. If there's activity of seeing going on, then something must be seen. There must be an object of that seeing. So seeing and seeing go together. You can't separate them from one another. And anyway, yet if these two are there, then also there must be the seer. Who is seeing?
Yes,
huh? Seeing just doesn't happen like that without somebody being there to see. Who is experiencing that seeing? So seer, seeing, and seeing. Three things are necessary, absolutely necessary, and there's no way we can go without one or the other being there. You can't be a seer and not have the power to see. Seeing has to require seeing activity, and seeing activity requires that there's a seeing. So these three things are not separable from one another, and yet the scientists want to say that the seeing thing has some kind of independence. independent existence, that even before there was a seer or a seeing, a seer or seeing, there was a seeing thing there. I wanted to say like that.
Yes,
no. This is improper understanding.
So
Vedic
so that means
Vedic
that means in the modern scientific
okay
Maharaj, you speak I'll say
yes, that. And Vedic conception is complete. It tries to give a complete understanding of the thing. Total knowledge, perfect knowledge. Whereas the scientific conception is very what did you say? Something is wrong.
One-sided.
Something missing. One-sided, yes. Very good. And one-sided abstract. They're not real. Not concrete. Although it sounds like we're talking about something in the sky that you can't grasp.
Yes.
Of course you can't grasp. What is logical can't be grasped. Like I was saying, Newton's laws can't be seen in the sky. No, nowhere they're written down. But that doesn't mean they're any less valid than the things that they are. Predicting the behavior of sun and earth follow a certain laws of Newton's gravitational attraction. Sun, earth, moon, all the planets, they are following those things, can be seen, but they are following the laws which can't be seen.
Right.
So the laws are no less valid than the things that they're following the law, just because they can't be seen. So in the same way, seeing activity and the seer can't be seen.
Right.
But
yes.
They're nonetheless we can't do without them. From logic. We have to be logical. Science has to be logical, has to be rational. So these things are required. Just like we see the sun moving from the east to the west. Right? Comes up in the morning, goes down in the evening. No, it doesn't. According to the scientists, the sun doesn't move. We are moving. Earth is turning. So what you can see is not everything. That logic is required. When you understand, when we want to understand the thing properly, we have to say, no, sun is not moving. Although we are seeing the sun moving, no, we have to deny what we are seeing and take what the logical thing is. The rational thing is the reality. I like that. So we depend upon the rational aspect, the logical aspect, to determine what is the real. And we don't do, it's not that we do without that part. Okay, what else do you want to say?
So modern science actually wants to, experience things as an object, the ultimate reality as an object. So it seems that that is then basically flawed kind of, you know, presumption about the nature of reality.
Can you please say that again?
That means in modern science, when the scientists want to develop the unified conception, say for example the Big Bang or some other supersymmetry or some other, you know, whatever they term by their, you know, a mathematical approach or whatever, so they want to ultimately see that thing as an object of, and they want to remove the subject completely. And but whereas in say quantum mechanics, they say that the subjective the subject cannot be wholly removed. But actually, for example, Penrose has said that actually even in quantum mechanics there are two parts: the deterministic part and the non-deterministic part. So really speaking, then the subjective idea that is being spoken in the Vedas is far different from what is being spoken in either in this modern science, in the classical sense, or even in the quantum mechanical sense.
Yes. It's different. Yes. In the sense that is that we understand that the subjective part is fundamental, irreducible.
Yes, ma'am.
Not only say the scientists think that part is coming from the objective part. The subjective part is coming from the objective. But we take the opposite idea. The objective is coming from the subjective. Subjective has to be first. Then the objective can be there. Otherwise it makes no sense to speak of the objective first. Subjective is the foundation. Then the objective can rest upon that like a shadow. So, very good. Is this interesting?
Yes. So then actually one question is coming still, Maharaj.
What's that?
The supreme subject, that is Krishna actually,
uh-huh.
How he sees himself.
How does he see himself?
Yes, Maharaj.
He is Satchidananda Vigraha. So he experiences himself through his pleasure potency. Fulfillment. Fulfillment means that there must be something there that is to be utilized for one's own purpose, one's own satisfaction. So like that. We understand that Krishna is not a monistic conception. A differentiated conception. Just like we were saying previously, Advaita, Advayan. Advaita doesn't mean monism. Krishna is not just Krishna without any difference. So the negative is there, that is Krishna. Krishna is the negative potency. Otherwise, how he can enjoy means he takes what is there for himself. What is separate from him, he takes to himself, for his own self. Reality is for itself. Means whatever is there, apparently different from Krishna, he takes that for himself. That means he negates its independence. What is appearing to be independent, he negates that independence and says, no, it is mine. And just like
yes.
you have a car, let's say. Let's say a computer or whatever. Something practical that you have may have. You have a computer. Computer was originally there in the store. It was not yours. It belonged to the store. But you buy it, then it becomes yours. So you have negated its independence from you. In that way, you have negated its independence. Like that, Krishna negates whatever is there in the world. He negates that independent thing. And it becomes for him. Of course, everything is originally for him. But that for him means that the negation of that thing is there. The negation of the thing as a separate item is already there in order to be for him. This is how we understand the concept of being for him. So like that, Krishna has his differentiated aspect. And the differentiated aspect and its independence has to be negated in order to understand how it is for Krishna. And that being for himself is what the reality is. So that reality contains negation. And that negation is his satisfaction, his fulfillment. That thing that is there is being taken in for his satisfaction, his enjoyment. So he definitely experiences satisfaction in that way, through negativity. And that is Krishna's energy. Absolute negativity.
Yes. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Yes?
Yeah. I was trying to ask some question.
What's that?
Maybe I will not be framed correctly. I'll try. I don't understand how to differentiate consciousness from the mind.
Okay. That's very simple. What you are thinking? Whatever you are thinking is in your mind, right?
Yeah.
Mind means what you are thinking, what you are feeling, what you are thinking, what you are willing. That's in the mind.
Okay.
Now, you are conscious of that, no? You are aware when you are thinking. You say, I'm thinking. That means you are conscious of what that you are thinking. When you are feeling something, you are aware that you are feeling that. When you are willing something, you know that you are willing that. You are conscious of that. So consciousness is always above whatever you are thinking, feeling, or willing. Feeling, thinking, feeling, willing belong to the mind. But the awareness that you are doing those things, that belongs to the consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Very simple.
Yeah, it looks simple, but...
Consciousness means the awareness. You can be aware that you are thinking, that your mind is working. What the contents of your mind is, you are aware of that.
Such as I am listening, and it says my mind or my consciousness?
Well, you are listening through your ear, right? And the ear is connected with the mind, because you have to interpret. But the process of awareness of what's that, of that whole process is the consciousness, is the soul. And that's why it is said that from the conscious level, you can analyze what's going on in the mind, how the mind is working to hear the sound, to interpret the sound. Just like sounds are coming in, here I'm talking to you, huh? There's some sounds. You put it on one of those meters, and you'll see the needle moving whenever sound is coming through your speakers. Huh? So it's just electromagnetic activity going on. But that sound is producing some sound. There's a speaker in your computer, and it has a little magnet, and it's moving the magnet, and the sound is coming out. Something like that is happening from your physical perspective. But it is not just sounds. It's some language, something that you understand. Some concepts are being generated there. Now, where are they coming from? It's not coming from the electrical impulses. You're hearing something. You're understanding something. That's the mind. All right. But then you're conscious. You know that you're listening. You know that these things are going on. That's higher.
Correct. And when I'm listening, but I started thinking something else, then that is my consciousness? Or
no, that's the mind. Thinking something else. You can be aware. You're listening to something. Something is coming into you. Then your mind goes into thinking something else, and you're aware, oh, I changed my mind. My mind is not behaving very well, is not listening very well. That's the consciousness that is above, understanding that what's happening with the mind, that's giving these thoughts to the mind. Why is the mind wandering?
Is it possible sometimes I'm not conscious and what is happening then?
Yes, of course. Now just like you are breathing. If I did not tell you were breathing, you were unconscious of that. But now you can be conscious of it.
Okay. Makes some sense. You can help me. And one more question. Maybe you have replied before also. How do we differentiate between mind and intelligence?
What's the difference? Mind is making choices. Judgments, they're called judgment. This is a cow, this is a tree, this is this, this is that. Then intelligence is making some determination about what is the correct judgment. Is it true or is it false? Something above the judgment. Judgment is there, but then if the thing is true, when I say this is a cow, And if I further inquire, is it true that this is a cow? That's a higher judgment. Huh?
Okay. And such as belief, the mind is in our head. And somewhere is intelligence. Does it exist?
Huh? Intelligence is what?
As we believe, mind is in our head.
Oh, intelligence? Where is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you can also say. Actually, not in the head, but in the head. Mind is not in the head, intelligence is also not in the head, but yes, people refer to it like that nowadays. But mind and intelligence are all over the body. They're the basis of the body. And I can understand that in a simple way also. For me, it is very simple to understand. People are talking so much about the brain. The mind is the brain. What are they talking about brain? Brain does not exist independently in our body. There are so many things that have to go on in order for the brain to work properly within our body. Whole nervous system is involved in maintaining the brain. Huh? The blood system, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, everything is contributing to the brain function. Huh? Without all those activities going on, brain would not have the quality that it has. So to isolate the brain like that and say the brain is doing this thing, that means they're stupid. I consider that ignorant. Brain cannot possibly be considered like that, just as some neurons. and trying to figure out how the neurons are working to produce mind. This is craziness. This is the silliness of the scientists. Narrow-minded thinking.
Okay, and one more thing. Somebody asked me to inquire about that. Where, if you are a consciousness, and where are you in this body? And sometimes I will think about it. Actually, I'm never able to find out correctly where am I in this body.
Yeah, so in the scripture, Prabhupada told us that the soul is in the heart.
Okay.
But just like the sun is one place in the sky, the whole world, the whole universe is illuminated by the sun. Sun is in one place, but the rays are going out all over. Huh? So the light is illuminating everything in the solar system, or everything in the universe, you can say. The sun is going is illuminating everywhere. Although it's in one place, it's illuminating everywhere. Similarly, the soul is in the heart. But the consciousness is emanating from the soul, is going everywhere in the body. So you can feel what's happening with your toe, and you can feel what's happening with the top of your head, or anywhere in the middle between those two points. Consciousness pervades the whole body. It doesn't go outside the body. You're not conscious of what I'm conscious of. Huh? But you are conscious of what's in your, what your body is conscious of. So it pervades the body like that. But still it's in one point. 1/10,000th the tip, size of the tip of the hair.
Right.
Okay.
One last question, if you allow me.
Of course.
You told about the three things. One is object, and the second is how we perceive, and the third is the experiencer. And I don't know, maybe somewhere you told key, if we are not experiencing and encountering, if the senses are not there and the the person who is sensing them is not there, then there is no existence of object. Maybe I'm confident. One more thing. There is object, there is a person, senses, and the sensor, the person who is sensing those things.
Yeah.
There's no, is there true key, there's no existence of object if there are no...
So let's say you're looking at a rock, huh?
Yeah.
You're looking at a rock. Now you close your eyes. Now is the rock there or isn't it there?
For me it is not there because I'm not able to sense that.
But for other people it may be there, right?
Like, that was my concern.
Yes, yes. So this is a problem. Then how to solve that problem? Huh? So the thing is this. I have to, in order for me to say that the rock is still there, even when I close my eyes, I have to think that. That's my conception of the material world. My conception of the outer world is that it exists even while I'm not experiencing it. That's my thinking, the thought. My conception. So it's still coming from me in that sense. Just like a baby. A baby, from the psychological experiments, they can understand that when a baby, when a person comes in the room, baby sees that person for the first time. And when the person goes out, just like mother, the mother of the baby comes in, when the baby is very young, mother comes into the room. Baby thinks he's seeing that person for the first time. When she goes out, he thinks the person has disappeared. When he comes back in, again, oh, this person has, a new person has come. That's the way the baby experiences. He doesn't think that there's any endurance of the person when he's not in his vision. That way the baby thinks about things. So he thinks that the new person has come. He doesn't connect the previous experience with the present experience. Because a baby has to learn that, how to connect that a person has an endurance even when he's not experiencing them. He has to learn that. So we learn to think like that. we learn, we are conditioned to see things like that. That the stone, when I'm not looking, is still there. We are conditioned to think like that. And from our experiences, so many things, we learn that. That's a learned conception. That's a learned reality. But it's not the actual reality. That we have to learn also. By proper spiritual training. How that reality is formed, and how we can get beyond that formed reality that's called Maya. How that Maya is created, that illusion of reality, material reality is created, and how we have to get beyond that. So that is a science also. Not so simple to think, but nonetheless, it is there. The science is there. And to study deeply all these things, that is our business. That is our scientific training. And then we will understand things in that way. Not easy, but anyhow, we have to make a beginning. And one who is very serious and sincere about these things, they can study very deeply and get and come to some realization that all these things, how they are correct, how they are true. Okay, I think we have gone over very long today.
Thanks, Maharaj.
Yes. So next time, page 30, we'll start from there.
Thanks, Maharaj. Thanks a lot.
Yes,
thank Prabhu.
You, Maharaj. Kavya, Kartik, Prabhu?
Yes, Maharaj.
Did you record all of that?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Maybe you can send us a recording?
Yes, Maharaj. Do I mail it?
So this way, we can put it in our satsang.
Can I get your email?
Maharaj, I have also recorded.
Oh, you have recorded?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then Sai knows how to put it up on our satsang site.
Okay, Maharaj.
You won't have to do that. All right. And Purushottam Prabhu?
Yes, Maharaj.
Do you have anything you want to say? I mean, after this, did you speak with Baman Maharaj?
Oh, well, Maharaj, I think it is not so easy, Maharaj, because...
All right.
I think there are a whole lot of problems there.
Oh, I see. Okay. Then I will offer my humble dandavat pranams to all.